Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. I'm Alex Hernandez of Noticias Univision Chicago, which airs every weekday morning at 5 and 6. Johanna Hernandez has the evening off. On the show tonight.
We can fix that. And that's what I'm going to do today.
President Biden celebrates the 12th anniversary of DACA while announcing a new policy shielding some undocumented residents from deportation. It's a bit cooler today, but those hot temperatures are set to return. The impact this heat wave is having on workers.
Being a first-generation American, I never thought that this would happen for me.
And we take you inside a dance studio promoting body inclusivity. And now to some of today's top stories. Chicago advocates for immigrant rights are celebrating President Joe Biden's new policy protecting some undocumented residents from deportation. It comes after the administration's announcement earlier this week of a new executive action that would allow certain undocumented spouses and children of U.S. citizens to apply for permanent residency without leaving the country. Before, under federal law, an undocumented person who enters the country and marries a U.S. citizen must first request parole before applying for residency, a process that requires them to leave the country.
This is the biggest immigration policy victory since the implementation of DACA. And for the spouses of U.S. citizens who have already been living here and contributing to the vibrancy of our communities for 10 or more years, they now have a pathway to stay together and to apply for legal residency.
Republicans are pushing back on the plan, saying it would only encourage more people to the U.S. illegally. Officials say the action would impact around 500,000 families across the country. The administration says it's hoping to start accepting applications by the end of the summer. We'll have more on this topic coming up in the program. The head of Illinois Republican Party is making an exit 4 weeks before the Republican National Convention. Illinois GOP Chair Don Tracy announced his resignation, citing intra-party power struggles. He also says he's concerned about the direction the state party is taking. In a statement, Tracy says, and I quote, "In better days, Illinois Republicans came together after tough intra-party elections. Now, however, we have Republicans who would rather fight other Republicans than engage in the harder work of defeating incumbent Democrats by convincing swing voters to vote Republican." Tracy goes on to say he'll resign when a successor is elected, preferably no later than July 19th, the day after the RNC ends. And officials are expanding the city program that provides support to families impacted by gun violence. City officials say the expansion to the Emergency Supplemental Victims Fund will cost roughly $10 million over the next 3 years. The program started in 2022 with just 5 communities, but it's now expanding to 15 across the city. The fund provides $1,500 for funeral and burial expenses to residents whose family members have been killed by gun violence, and also $1,000 to help cover basic needs and temporary relocation costs. Chicagoans are getting a break today from the record-breaking heat wave, but it may be short-lived. Sweltering temperatures are expected to return in the next few days, with tomorrow's forecasted high at 90 degrees, with a toasty 96 degrees predicted for Saturday. For information on cooling centers in the city, visit our website. Up next, we explore a sweeping change to U.S. immigration policy. Stay with us.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Advocates are calling it the most expansive federal protection for immigrants in over a decade. As we mentioned earlier, this week, President Joe Biden unveiled an executive order protecting roughly 500,000 undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens from deportation. The announcement comes as advocates celebrate the 12th anniversary of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, better known as DACA. Biden's policy also expedites work visas for the tens of thousands of DACA recipients who arrived in the U.S. as children. Joining us now with more on the potential impact of Chicago's immigrant community are Laura Mendoza, immigration organizer at the Resurrection Project. Joining us via Zoom, Jaime DiPaolo, president and CEO of the Illinois Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and Giselle Rodriguez, co-founder and executive director at Illinois Workers in Action. I want to welcome all. Thank you for joining us today on this very important topic, as we all know. Laura, I want to start with you, since you're the one here with us physically. Yeah. I'm kidding, Laura. You obtained DACA when you were 24 years old. Can you tell us about your personal journey and the impact DACA has had on you and your family?
Yeah, DACA was a really important, is a really important part of my history and my story here in the U.S. So I was 24, meaning that I graduated high school and didn't really have a path to adjusting my status. Really wasn't, you know, it was difficult to think about going to college because it meant that once I graduated, I wasn't going to be able to work without a work permit. So, you know, you have a lot of these thoughts of like, is it worth it to go to school when you're not really going to have a path? And then at 24, I was able to obtain that work permit that then allowed me to actually finish my bachelor's degree in social work and then allowed me to go and start working in the career in my career. And so, you know, I've been now working in social services for the past 12 years. I was able to buy a house, mm-hmm. to buy a car, to really start thinking about retirement, not only for myself, but for my parents who are still undocumented. And so it was really helpful in that way.
How would gaining long-term citizenship benefit you and your family as well?
Yeah, so right now with DACA, it's up in the court. So for the past 6 years, you know, we haven't really known if this is a program that's going to continue to stay. And so, you know, as a homeowner, I think about, you know, what happens if I do get deported? You know, what's going to happen? So there were a lot of unanswered questions. And so the ability to have a path really allows me to think long term about my life here in the U.S. and plan out my future.
Definitely. Giselle, your story is a little different, right? You do have DACA. Actually, you've been in this country for 15 years as an undocumented dreamer. Can you tell us about you and your family?
Yes, absolutely. So I actually do not have DACA. My family.
Right. I'm sorry. That's what I meant to say. Apologize for that.
Yes, that's okay. So I don't have DACA. My family arrived here in 2009. I'm married, and what this would mean to me, it's going to change everything. Right now, I would have a path to get a work permit and legalize my status without having to leave the country. And this means everything for my family. I'm married. I have two small children, and it would just make everything better for us, for me not having to leave the country.
Yeah, you would have to leave the country. Can you explain to us how this complicated process and the risks involved in doing that?
Yeah. So basically, you know, adjusting our status is not an easy thing to do, right? But now with what President Biden has done, he created a pathway where I can stay in the United States while trying to adjust my status. Basically, it wouldn't require me to go to the country. I'm Mexican, so I would have to go to Juarez, right? Have my appointment there. And then because we entered the country without inspection, then we would get automatically a 10 or 5 year penalty bar.
Would you apply immediately?
Yes. So we still have to see what all the details are, the ins and outs of what the policy and the implementation is going to be. But absolutely, I would definitely try to apply as soon as I can to start the process. As we know, immigration and adjusting statuses, the process are really long, so I would start immediately.
Yeah. Jaime, going with you now, can you tell us what effect DACA has had actually on Hispanic businesses here in Chicago?
Well, it's huge. I mean, obviously, we are out here celebrating President Biden, what he did. It's not what we wanted, but we'll take the win. Keep in mind that 52% of all Latino immigrant businesses in the United States are immigrant owned. So a good percentage of those business owners are undocumented. So it's a great opportunity for them to become legal, because they've been paying taxes, they create employment, they create wealth in our communities. So why not give them the opportunity?
Definitely.
For example, what happened in Baltimore. Six, the people that died there on the bridge are six Latinos. It's not a coincidence. You know, Latinos are building this country and they deserve an opportunity. And three of those people that died actually own businesses without documents. So, you know, it's
How has the Hispanic Chamber actually helped connect city residents to DACA?
Well, we work in collaboration with Restoration Project and many other organizations to really get the word out and help them, you know, fill out those applications and get the good word out. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of misinformation. There's going to be a lot of people taking advantage of this great opportunity for DACA recipients. So we got to monitor that, police that, and making sure they go to the right people and get the right channels and the right information. At the end of the day, we are part of this great community. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Laura, going back with you, you actually describe the American workforce as an ecosystem, right? Can you talk about your work with the Resurrection Project and how Biden's new policy will actually be a game changer?
Yeah, so my work at the Resurrection Project is really making sure that the lives of immigrants in the state of Illinois in the U.S. Is better. And one of those ways that it could be better, right, is through being able to have a path to adjusting their status. So that is really vital and really important to us. You know, we are part of the workforce. There's so much data around how much we contribute. Like Pablo was saying, we create jobs, right? And even within jobs that are already established, if you look at a restaurant, right, you have back of the house. Back of the house tends to be primarily immigrant. And then that allows opportunities in front of the house for those primarily U.S. citizens, primarily English speakers, to be able to obtain jobs. So it's all related. We are the base of the workforce, and we are also creating jobs and opportunities for other people. And so, you know, at the Resurrection Project, we'll continue to push to make sure that people continue to be included in policies and that we actually do have a path to adjusting the status for the 11 million undocumented that are you know, in the U.S.
Yeah, and still waiting, right,
for
permanent citizenship here in this country. Giselle, you actually founded the Illinois Workers in Action with your husband in 2021. Could you tell us more about your organization and why you launched this initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. So our organization is called Illinois Workers in Action, and our mission is to empower workers through education, organizing, policy, develop leadership, and offer resources for the community. And basically, the idea is to help our immigrant community, and most of our immigrants are workers, so being an immigrant and working intersects, and basically, that's where the idea came from. My mother has been a temp worker all her life, has faced many different injustices throughout. I myself, you know, been an immigrant, working different jobs, fast food, or even in other nonprofit spaces, right? So I took all the experience that I had to try to develop and create something that I wanted to be special for our community to continue helping. So me and my husband in 2021 decided to create this nonprofit to continue offering different resources, specifically in the Black and Brown community and the immigrant community.
Unfortunately, this is our time for today. We could spend pretty much a whole hour or more talking about this issue. I want to thank all of you for joining us. Jaime, Giselle, Laura, thank you so much for being here. Up next, the impact this heat wave is having on workers. Stay with us.
Duré 3 días haciendo la fila.
Salimos de nuestro hogar de manera de protección.
Nosotros no vinimos a pedir nada.
Pero yo misma tomé fuerza y voluntad.
My home is here. Here is where I found I can make a difference.
For many, going to work means being inside a building where temperatures and conditions are regulated. But for those who work in warehouses, kitchens, or even outdoors, their environment can drastically change and even be made worse by summer heat waves like the ones we're experiencing this week. Advocates say a lack of regulation is leading to life-threatening conditions, but are working to educate workers about their rights. Joining us now with more are Miguel Albelo Rivera, the executive director of Latino Union of Chicago, and joining us via Zoom is Andrew Herrera, a representative from the Chicago Workers Collaborative. I want to welcome both of you. Thank you for being here. And I want to start with you, Miguel. You actually, your organization works directly with laborers. What conditions do they face when temperatures reach this level?
Absolutely. So we work with day laborers. These are folks that seek jobs at different corner hiring sites in Chicago. People will mostly see them at Home Depots, at the parking lots. Mm-hmm. So when they are seeking jobs by themselves, they're exposed to extreme temperatures, and then they will work in things like construction. Mm-hmm. They're most commonly found working outside.
They know them in Spanish as jornaleros.
Jornaleros, yes.
Correct?
Yeah.
Are employers even providing basic needs for these workers?
From what we have heard, not really. Employers recently with the new wave of new arrivals have been taking advantage of people's lack of knowledge on labor laws and have really been not paying fair wages, have been exposing people to dangerous working conditions and really life-threatening situations.
Without a doubt. Andrew, going with you, Chicago Workers Collaborative works with temporary workers. If there are unsafe conditions, what barriers actually can they face when looking for help?
Well, I think the number one barrier is an information barrier. You know, heat is a uniquely dangerous thing because it's not an obvious threat. It's a compounding threat. So if you're exposed to strenuous working conditions and high heats over, let's say, a week, you are at much elevated risk of a heart attack, heat stroke, different things like that on the fifth day than you are on the first day. So the first thing that workers need to know is how to identify the signs of heat exhaustion and then heat stroke. And the second thing is that, you know, there is a lack of uniform national rules to protect workers from high heat conditions, either inside or outside. And so what we really need is a uniformity of these rules. But for the time being, it's, you know, there are advocacy organizations like the Chicago Workers Collaborative and Latino Union that are working to educate workers on the fact that they have the right to stop working if the heat is too high and they're putting their lives at risk. And they're protected in doing so.
Unfortunately, some are even willing to risk their health, right? Because they need to work. They need the money, unfortunately. Yep. So that's why they'll keep even working, knowing that their health is at risk. Miguel, is there enough oversight protecting workers?
No. They're just isn't. We really have seen a huge gap in legislation around just environmental conditions at work sites.
What do you think meaningful oversight or legislation could look like to protect these workers?
So right now we're working on an ordinance, a city ordinance that is being sponsored by Alderman Haddon that would set guidelines for protecting workers that are doing work outside. So these are essential things, like allowing them access to water, shade, scheduling them during times where there isn't extreme heat.
Okay. Andrew, is this a broader issue beyond Chicago and Illinois?
Absolutely. There are statewide campaigns happening across the country. I believe Phoenix and Arizona and Tucson just followed suit in implementing some heat codes. In Florida, there's some campaigns. So the you know, what I was saying earlier is that the most important thing here is that we actually have national action. And we had some very good news actually on this, which is that on July 11th, so just over a week ago, OSHA announced that they are working on national rules. And those rules would apply to all employers across the country, but would not take effect until next summer at the very earliest. And you know, of course, things could change in November.
What efforts is your organization making to educate workers?
So the Chicago Workers Collaborative, along with, you know, other worker centers, we have direct contact with workers who are working in light manufacturing and warehousing. A lot of these places where there's very poor ventilation, particularly places where, like, bakeries, industrial bakeries and candy factories, the heat gets extremely high, and then they'll go into freezers. So they're not only going to the extremes of 140, 150 degrees and doing work in those conditions, but then also shifting all the way to, like, negative 30 degrees, and that puts an extreme stress on the body. So we've seen a lot of injuries and fatalities in these kinds of places. And we've been working with organizers, with the workers to communicate to them both their rights, but then also to help them organize with each other. Because when they stand together, that's when we have a real ability to protect them in the workplace.
Yeah. And Miguel, same question for you. What is your organization doing to educate workers?
So we have Jornalero organizers. Mm-hmm. They visit the different corner hiring sites throughout Chicago, and they engage with folks on a one-on-one basis, okay. letting them know what are the risks of heat stroke, letting them know what are their rights. But I will say it's not nearly enough, right? Okay. We have over 10 different corner hiring sites throughout Chicago.
And what's the response? What are they saying? How are they reacting to that information?
Some of them are taken by surprise, because a lot of them have been told that because they have come here...
That they have no rights.
Yeah, that they have no rights. So that's always a first step. Oh, I didn't know that. I had no idea. And then the follow-up around just how to keep yourself safe from extreme heat, it's stuff that really makes sense to them, right? But I want to emphasize something, and that is that while we understand that this is important work that we're doing, we understand that it is important to also emphasize that this is not the sole responsibility of the worker, that employers have a responsibility, and that this is a larger structural issue that we need to address.
Okay. What are the implications for workers who don't provide, you know, a safety environment for jornaleros, for laborers?
You mean for employers?
Employers, right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could potentially face having a worker die on the job. It has happened, and mm-hmm. it can definitely happen. Heat stroke is serious. So the employer themselves should feel a motivation to provide these protections,
and
because it also helps them. Yes.
Definitely. Guys, thank you so much for the insight. Thank you for the information. Definitely. Hopefully we can keep more jornaleros safe out there. Up next, we visit a Chicago dance studio celebrating self-love. We'll be right back. Are you looking to spice up your workout routine with some dancing? Well, a studio in the South Loop is doing just that. We went there to learn more about the owner's passion for encouraging self-love and inclusivity and her journey to the world of dance. Joanna Hernandez has a story.
We focus on having a good time, having sweaty, sexy, fun cardio during a dance fitness class.
Whether you're swaying your hips to your favorite song or breaking it down to an electric beat, the class is a full hour of a choreographed dance routine.
I love being able to listen to some good music and, you know, shake it a little bit.
It's called Diva Dance Chicago, a dance studio centered on community and building confidence. Lexi Longsworth is the owner of the Chicago branch.
Diva Dance is a nationwide franchise. I was a member in Houston, and I loved it so much. And I moved to Chicago, and I found one here, and I started taking classes, and then I started working the front desk, and then I started teaching classes, and then I got this amazing opportunity to become the owner.
During the day, Lexi is a speech pathologist, and by night, she runs the dance studio driven by body inclusivity.
I've grown up in the dance industry and, you know, just taking dancing, growing up and being in competition dance. And it's not necessarily the safest space for people in a bigger body. And so it's super important that when people come here, especially as adults, you know, our bodies change as we grow up and, you know, become into a womanhood. And so making people feel like this is a space where you can wear whatever you want, you can dance however you want, and no one's going to judge you when you're in this space.
One of the reasons Gabriela Lopez, a graduate student at Northwestern University, was motivated to join.
I had tried some other studios before, and it was just like people who either like were a certain body type and were professionals or like had danced their whole entire life and took all these professional classes. And I came here and I'm just like, people look like me, people come in all different levels and sizes.
From pop to reggaeton, there's a place for everyone on the dance floor.
It feels so great to put women in a space who might look like me, who might be a person of color, who might be in a bigger body, or who might just be looking for a great workout.
Using dance as a tool to celebrate movement and self-love, a message Lexi says her mother from Belize instilled in her.
It's just like, be who you are, and like, you are who you are, and you can't change that. So just like owning that, and I've kind of just grown up in this way where you just like dust your knees off and, you know, keep it pushing.
It's been nearly a year since Longsworth took ownership of the dance studio, and she says its success has led her to look into opening a second location.
To own a studio, it feels really liberating. You know, being a first-generation American, I never thought that this would happen for me.
For Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
Dance Diva is open 7 days a week. If you're interested in taking class, well, we have all the information on our website. And we'll be right back to wrap things up right after this. Well, that's going to be our show for tonight. Be sure to check our website, WTTW.com/news, for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night, 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Don't forget also to tune in to Noticias Univision Chicago every weekday morning at 5 and 6. I'll be waiting for you. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Alex Hernandez. Muy buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and proud sponsor of programming that offers advice and strategies to enhance the physical and mental well-being of fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.